You're listening to an extended interview from the Jazz FM Business Breakfast. A version of this was first broadcast on Tuesday, the 25th of October, 2016. I'm Nick Howard. Are investment funds broken? Daniel Godfrey, former head of the Investment Association, is one man who believes so. He's just started crowdfunding for what he thinks is the future of funds, what he's calling the People's Trust. Well, I sat down with Daniel and first asked him what makes the People's Trust different to other funds.
Well, what makes it different is that it's trying to do probably two or three things. One is it's trying to very clearly be an investment fund that's run for the benefit of its customers and nobody else. So it's an independent fund, which means that it doesn't have a commercial sponsor sitting above it who naturally will want to cream some of the profits and pull the strings. So it's completely independent. Secondly, it's going to take a much longer term approach to investing than really any other fund that I can think of at the moment. So it's saying to its customers, if you give this at least a 7-year measurement window to invest in, we can invest in a different way to the way funds conventionally invest. And by taking a longer term approach, by supporting companies to invest themselves in their own futures, there's a high likelihood that we'll be able to give you better returns over the long term. But also, by investing in that way and supporting companies in their own long term investment, there's an additional benefit, which means that whilst getting better returns for yourself, the way we invest should have a better impact on the economy and society. And putting all those together, I think, gives it a very different quality to anything that's been done before. And it can do that because it's not seeking to make profits for anyone else.
You do sound as if you were taking aim at other movers and shakers in the industry. I mean, is this something that you feel there are issues here?
It's interesting you say taking aim. I've worked in the industry for over 30 years, and I can tell you that there are a lot of very good people and a lot of very good firms. The problem isn't really so much with bad people and bad firms. It's with the cumulative effect of the system itself, which has shareholders who want investment firms to make big profits, where talent is highly competed for, like in football, and where customers typically are driven by their emotions. So when markets turn down, they're fearful. If the fund they're in doesn't do as well as other funds over a relatively short period of time, they're out. And this collectively puts great pressure on firms to act in quite short-term ways. And in effect, it gives them very little choice. So if you're the chief executive of a firm and you're committed, you'd like to see radical change to give a better outcome for your customers and better impact on society, you know that if you have a short-term fall in profits, your shareholders will fire you. If you do something that might bring down bonuses for your staff, they'll leave you. And if you do something which means that you underperform your competition over short periods of time, your customers will go. So how do you, within that, actually change things? And that's why the People's Trust is trying to come at this from a different angle, and why it's had great support from many people in the industry who would like to see reform, who would like to see things done differently. And because we don't have that commercial imperative for anyone else other than our customers, and because our employees know if they sign up to work for us, they won't have a bonus scheme, and because our customers will only come on the basis that they've been told very clearly they need to be there for at least 7 years in order to make this work for them, we think we can change things.
It all sounds very good in principle. You know, the idea that you've got the staff who know that they won't get bonuses, but that means that they haven't got the pressure. You've got the customers who know that they can look ahead to the long term. But how do you actually, when things do get tough, make it that people don't end up abandoning it?
I think that it's all about communication. It's about honest, simple language communication up front and continuously. So I would expect when we get this up and running to be in regular communication with our shareholders, and to enable dialogue with shareholders too, to be saying to them, you know, if markets are going well, I'd expect to be writing to them regularly saying, you know, it ain't always going to be this good. And when they're going badly, say, remember, it ain't always going to be this bad. And there is plenty of evidence going back well over 100 years that stock markets do have some fairly violent swings. But if you give it a long period of time, you'll do better than you will in most other forms of investment.
A moment ago, you mentioned one of the things which I think has been the most said about the People's Trust before it actually launched, which is that you're not paying your staff bonuses.
Yeah.
You're not the only ones to be doing it. Neil Woodford's firm has also said that it's doing similar, that there isn't evidence that it actually gets better returns for investors. But how do you get the best staff from, presumably, the firms that are giving out bonuses?
Well, there's more to life than just money. And I think there are plenty of
people... Says the investments trust owner.
I think there is. And I think, you know, clearly money is very important. And people will be paid well. People in financial services get paid well. And you could easily argue that they get paid better just because they happen to work in financial services than in many other sectors. But that's a reality. But I do think that people are prepared to give up some quantum in return for inherent value, feeling value in what they're doing.
The intangibles.
The intangibles. And I think also doing something they really believe in and that they believe is making a difference. So whilst, of course, there are people in the industry who make an awful lot of money, as another example, I'm involved with a company called Big Issue Invest Fund Management, which is an investment arm of the Big Issue, which does what's called social impact investing. And we're planning to do a little bit of social impact investing as part of the People's Trust. And I can tell you the people who work there are not working for the money. So I do think that you can find great people who get good pay, but are not looking for stratospheric pay if they can do something that they really believe in.
We're coming around to your chief executive of the Investment Association, and then you resigned. You were trying to push through greater transparency and getting members to sign up to a statement of principles. They pushed back. Is there an issue here in the industry?
Well, as I said, I think there were many firms who supported transparency and supported the statement of principles. But if you're running a trade association, critical mass is not 50.1%. It's more like 90%. It doesn't mean you have to go at the pace of the slowest, but you do need very significant support, particularly for significant reform. And it really goes back to what I was saying before, that the systemic pressures against radical reform are so big that even when you have very many people who recognise the need, the system itself kind of spits it out, and that's why you need to come at it, I think, another way.
So is the People's Trust a way of actually doing that?
This is the theory. So the proposition is that if you're going to achieve something that does things in a radically different way, you need a different form of ownership structure, you need a different form of remuneration structure, and you need a different form of client understanding of what is in their best interests. There's a lot of research done on something called behavioural economics, and it identifies something called loss aversion. People are very averse to losing money. They're very averse to risk of bad things happening, and sometimes that leads to behaviours that are not really in their interests. And in particular in investment, that what that would mean would be that if you're investing money and you don't need the money for 10, 15, 20 years, then the fact that the stock market may have fallen by 10 or 15% is kind of irrelevant to you if in 10 or 15 or 20 years' time you're sitting on a much bigger pot of money than you would have been if you'd kept the money under the mattress or
sure,
in the bank.
But that red number is terrifying.
But that short-term red number terrifies people. So what we've got to do is really explain to people up front, you know, do you want to be up here, i.e. on the top of the mountain in terms of the amount of money you've got, or do you want to be on the slopes near the bottom because you've had a much less scary ride? Talking about loss aversion, a metaphor for that, which is particularly compelling, I thought. I sat and watched a documentary on TV with Daniel Kahneman, who was the sort of inventor of this thesis, with my youngest son, and we found it very interesting. But a couple of days later, it was around the time of World Cup, I noticed some statistics that had been produced, which said that if you were in a penalty shootout and you were taking a penalty which, if you scored it, meant that your team won, you were something like 85% likely to score the penalty. If you're taking a penalty where missing it would mean that your team lost, there was about a 25% chance of scoring the penalty. So the pressure on people of losing something is that great. And I think that is a perfect real-life example of loss aversion in practice and why it's a good idea for people to hand their money over to professionals to run on their behalf, but to say to them, I really want you to run this for the long term for me. Because otherwise, professionals will do kind of what you want them to do, which is take that volatility out and you end up with a lower return.
But if this is such a powerful drive, do you think that it can be overcome with just telling people to stay calm when the bad times come?
Well, I believe so. I mean, so over the last year, I've been talking to hundreds of people about this. And of course, it's always different when you're able to sit in front of people and look in their eyes and show them the charts and have a one-to-one conversation. You can see that they get it. You know, it actually is logical that if you invest for the long term, if we back companies with great strategies and great management and good financial resources and tell them we want them to invest in their people, we want them to invest in new product development, in research and development, in new markets, in controlling their environmental footprint, in dealing with pay inequality within their own company, then in 10, 15 years' time, we're going to actually probably have got more out of that company than doing what we tend to do today, which is to say to the company, we want you to chop down all the trees in your orchard to sell the wood because we want the money now, rather than encouraging them to plant new fruit trees that we can be harvesting in 10 years' time.
As you say, it's a logical way of doing things, but we're dealing with an inherently irrational behaviour.
Now, this is why behavioural economics can actually be useful, because you work out how can you help people make better decisions than negative behaviour patterns would generally imply. And I think we've got to really use behavioural economics to help people make better decisions. My fear is that what we quite often see is behavioural economics being used to help us sell more to people of the same old stuff that's actually not really in their best interests. I mean, it's certainly better than doing nothing, but it could be so much better. And I think if you look at the world we're in today, if we're unable to generate much higher economic growth over the next 10, 15, 20 years, and if we're not able to share the fruits of that economic growth more fairly throughout society, we have a population which is increasingly angry, not just here, but look at places like the US. So if we don't get growth, if it's not shared more fairly, we're going to end up with a slide into populism, xenophobia, and protectionism, which actually will make things worse for everybody. So I think there's no more important issue right now than how do we create an environment in which people give each other permission to do things for the long term. And this is the real key, is the permissioning of it. Because of course, people will always do what their customers ask them to do or tell them to do. There's not much point doing something that they've asked you not to do, because they will just go somewhere else, and that doesn't help anybody.
Given your optimism, and also contrasting with the slightly terrifying picture of society that you painted, where do you actually see the investment industry in, let's say, 10 years? I mean, do you think that they will have taken these principles? And I suppose, what happens if they don't?
Well, I can tell you where I'd like it to be, which is that the People's Trust and others who are committed to long-term investment as being a better way forward will have had a real impact, that we have a sort of grassroots, a roots-up revolution where real people are taking control of their futures by investing in the long-term and getting better results, where the style of investment that implies is actually leading to more and better and higher paid and more skilled jobs. If we're not there, I hope that we're at least on that road. And I think, you know, we will get to some kind of crisis point at some point. You can't predict when. When either this is going to come from the grassroots, or it will come about through some kind of government regulation and legislation. I think that's very suboptimal, because it tends to be less efficient. It tends to be gameable. Or we will have some kind of slide into a very unpleasant form of politics, which I think would make things worse. I don't accept that that's where we have to end up. I think it's absolutely not too late to turn things around. But we do need economic growth, and I don't see how you get it without long-term investment in the interests of the people who are supplying the capital. And that's your listeners, whether it's with large sums of money or £10 a month going into their auto-enrolled pension scheme. They're the ones who are ultimately providing the money that's being invested. So it needs to be run for their benefit, but it needs to be run in a way that leads to better outcomes for society, the environment and employees too.
We talked about the theory in some detail, but how do you actually go from making this an idea into actually making it a reality?
So we're at the beginning of the process at the moment, where we're seeking founders to contribute towards our development costs to help us get this off the ground. Because we are going to be a fund that will be entirely owned by its customers, we don't have a commercial sponsor. But if we're going to get it from here to an actual launch, which is a listing on the London Stock Exchange, there are some real costs involved in that. What we're trying to do now is to find founders to come to our website, to contribute £20 towards our development costs because they think, hell yeah, I'd like to see a fund like that for me to invest in or for my children to invest in, and I'd like to see it get off the ground.
What do they actually get for their money?
I'd say there are two things, and the main reason actually would be because you want to see a fund like this exist. But founders will be offered a discount on the share price when we do the launch in the first half of 2017.
If this does strike a chord with listeners and they want to get involved, where should they go?
They should come online to www.thepeoplestrust.co.uk.
That was Daniel Godfrey, Chief Executive of the People's Trust, speaking to me for Jazz FM's Business Breakfast. You can hear the programme every weekday morning from 6 a.m. on Jazz FM.